So about 2 months ago, we got the van, and it was so shiny and bright and clean, and it was a real difference between the two vehicles that we had, the one before and now this one, because we were willing to be seen in this one. It was so so shiny, right? And I wanted to always keep it that way. And so I'm kind of always out there making sure that nobody's going to door ding us and worried about parking straight and everything all of the time. And if you think I'm obsessed with it, there's another driver in our house, and she's a lot more obsessed with that than I am. She's looking at me in the back of the room there. But yesterday we were in a big hurry. We had the men's breakfast. It was great. And then we were headed out to a special sports day for Sam. And it was at 10 o'clock in San Marcos. We had to drive, had to get there really fast, a lot of preparation to get there. And we get into the car, and we realize that we're late. And so Lauren's driving. She starts the car and starts backing up. And all of a sudden, we feel this hit. And Lauren said, "What did I just run over in our garage?" And I said, "You didn't. You hit the garage door."
Oh, no.
So all of a sudden, this thing that we put so much value in had these little tiny scratches. And I got them out. Don't worry, everyone. It's okay. But it was kind of this lesson, and, you know, this kind of ruined our morning. And it's just stuff, you know? We love our stuff so much. I want you to think for just a second about the most valuable thing in your home. You know, after you save the kids and the animals, and there's a fire, what do you grab? You know, what is the most valuable item in your home? I want you to share what it is with me. Tell us when you're not going to be at home, where we can find it in your house now. I'm joking, but everyone kind of grabbed their stuff and moved a little closer inward. You know, we value our things. Did anybody read about this story in the news a couple of weeks ago about this family that found baseball cards in their attic? Did you hear about this? All right, last prize for anybody who can name who the baseball player was. Ty Cobb. This goes to Joe. This is a limited edition Christchurch pin in the back.
The only silver one.
It's not real silver, don't worry. Speaking of value, right? Okay, but the cool thing about this story was this family found 7 Ty Cobb baseball cards in their attic. That's like winning the lottery. But how do we understand value? Remember when I gave the one-of-a-kind flashlight to Margaret? It's about supply and demand, of course. And so, you know, as long as there's a high enough demand, the item has great value. Except the only thing that changes it is the supply available, because only a certain amount of people will want this thing. Now, the really strange part about finding 7 Ty Cobb cards when there already are only known to be 15 in existence is the number of cards that you have decreases the value for each one of the cards. So it's weird to think about it, but it almost might have been better for them to have just burned a couple of them, and they would have made more money in the long run. How bizarre is that? Now, the only other way that things have value to us, and I'm hoping that this is the case when I said you're in a fire and what do you take with you? The only thing that I'm imagining, other than something that has great financial value, is something that has great emotional value. And how do we decide that? Well, it was the only thing that my great-great-grandfather brought over from Ellis Island, you know, through Ellis Island. Or for me, you know, I wear this cross that you can probably buy for about $15 in a Christian bookstore, but it has great value because my grandpa wore it when he preached his sermons. And there's all sorts of reasons like that why something would have value. But again, it falls on that scale of supply and demand. There is only one of these that my grandpa wore. Now, the demand might not be so high in numbers, but the value is established because there's a great demand on my heart for this. Remember the story of the pearl of great price? Or where does Jesus say we should store up our treasures? But all the time we kind of can hear these stories, and we might still have this idol at home that's our thing. That certainly, when he says, "Do not store up treasures on earth," he doesn't mean that, of course, right? And we can sort of talk ourselves out of that. We show what we value by what we spend our time with. For me, somebody would say that my value is in my cell phone because I'm always staring at it, you know? The thing that we value is always that thing that has the greatest value comes from the greatest demand or the smallest supply. And that's what's at the center of our gospel today, is this issue of value. It's just one day before Jesus goes into Palm Sunday. This is a Saturday night. And Jesus is sitting with his disciples at the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. It's important to remember how their home is referred to. We'll get back to that. But Jesus is eating with his disciples. Now, back then, they didn't have comfy seating like this. They would have sat reclined. They would have been laying down to eat. And probably the room was so full of these disciples, these followers of Jesus, that somebody who wanted to get to Jesus could only really reach his feet. Because that's the outer circle. And Mary comes up and breaks the seal on this very expensive bottle of perfume. And she anoints Jesus' feet with this. It's probably the only part of him that she can get to. She anoints his feet. And then she wipes up that perfume with her own hair. This is a very vulnerable story, isn't it? It's spiritually very intimate that this woman is willing to just pour out herself like this. I've talked about this before, but history stinks. Like, if you really considered that, when we talk about washing disciples' feet or somebody perfuming Jesus' feet, he would have worn sandals all over the place. And so for this woman to come and wash his feet like this and put her own hair, the crown upon her head, and wash up his dirty feet, but with this very expensive perfume. This is a powerful, powerful story. And of course, Big Judas, the critic, then comes back and says, you know, we could have sold that for a lot of money. I love the commentary in here that we get from John. John says, you know, Judas didn't care about the poor. He just wanted to take some of that money for himself because he kept the money bags. I felt bad for our treasurer this week when I said, who is it that keeps track of all of the money for the disciples? It's Judas. And so it shows how much we trust our money people, right? but here's Judas complaining. Why would she do this? You know, this is so such a waste of money, and that money could be mine. I mean, the poor's. And so what happens then is Jesus rebukes, and if you read the letter I wrote out this week, there is something so deflating about criticism, especially criticism in worship. And Jesus is so strong to rebuke back and say, leave her alone. In fact, in the Gospel of Mark, it says, this woman's, what she does will be told as long as the gospel is told. Because I want people to remember this incredible moment. Because what is Mary doing in that moment? Jesus tells us, what is she preparing his body for? Burial, right? I think Mary holds the record for the most burial preparations for short-term deaths. Because if you would think about it, she prepares Jesus' feet, and more than likely, she would have prepared Lazarus' body, her own brother's body, after he died as well. And it's this very expensive bottle of perfume which makes me pause at this moment. Again, we've got Lazarus dying not too long ago. And then we've got Jesus being prepared for burial here. They have this expensive, very expensive burial oil. Why didn't she use it on Lazarus? She opens it up and she unseals it for Jesus, but her own brother she doesn't open it up for. Isn't that interesting? You would imagine that after Lazarus dies, and the family is so sad about this, that Mary or Martha, who know about this bottle of perfume, would have it through their head, maybe we should use the perfume. But they don't. Isn't that interesting? You know, we hear that when Jesus comes to resurrect Lazarus, there's kind of a pushback from the family. You know, he's been in there for 3 days, and not to get crass or anything, but his body's going to smell terrible. I don't think that would be the case if they prepared with the expensive perfume like this. But they chose to hold it off. Now, the way they're described, living in the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, these are siblings living together, which in that time, just reading that tells us something about their family. Somewhere along the line, they've either been orphaned or they have been widowed, because it's not the home of the husband. It's the home of one of these ladies in Lazarus. This is an unconventional living situation, which means something tragic must have happened along the line. These are not wealthy people. So imagine being so wealthy, or so impoverished, so vulnerable in society, and then consider having a year of your wages in a bottle of perfume. That's a lot of money that you have on the shelf here. And so it becomes this item that you prize, that you almost idolize, because we know that no matter what happens to our family, if we're destitute and we can't eat anymore, this can be sold. Judas told us himself. This can be sold and we can be protected. They're relying on this bottle for comfort, for protection. You know, it becomes an idol, as we do with so many of our valued items. And I think that when Lazarus dies, there has to be a part in Mary and Martha that says, maybe we should hold off on using it, because we don't know what tomorrow brings. We can't trust in Lazarus' money anymore. We have to trust in the bottle. And we put all of our trust in the bottle. And it protects us because we know we can sell it at any time. So maybe we don't use it on Lazarus' body. But then not long later, they use it on Jesus. So what has changed? Something has changed. We hear about this family in three different stories in the New Testament, which is really cool. We get to see this amazing transformation that goes on in their lives. The first thing that we hear about is, of course, when Mary and Martha are there, and Martha is cooking up a storm and prepping the table, and Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet just listening to the teaching. And Martha gets fed up. She's doing all of the work. And Martha says to Jesus, "Hey, tell on my sister for not helping me with some of the preparations." I know a lot of women who have taken that on as their life verse, by the way. Tell my brother what to do, or tell my sister what to do right now, Jesus. But Jesus says, no, you know, Mary's shown the more excellent way. Mary sits at my feet and she knows it's not just about eating. It's about receiving the word of God. And I think after that moment, they understand that they need to shift their priorities a bit. They need to consider what is the most valuable thing. And then the next time we hear about them, we've got Lazarus in his grave. Their brother Lazarus has died, and Jesus holds off on visiting the family. And he holds off long enough that Lazarus actually dies from his illness. And he goes to see the family, and they accuse him almost and say, if only you were here, you could have done something. You see, they know that he's the most important part. They know that he could save him from death. But now that he has died, Is there any hope left? They're hopeless. They trusted him in life, but maybe not in death. And of course, there's this incredible moment when Jesus calls out, "Lazarus, come out!" And the stone is rolled away and Lazarus comes back to life. This is that moment when Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will not die." So first they're transformed by knowing that they have value in Jesus. That Jesus is the great valuable thing for their life. That they can trust in him for their lives. And what they learn in that moment when Lazarus comes out from the grave is that they can trust him even in their deaths. That he can be trusted not just with the things of this world, but with the power over life and death. You see, this family gets transformed at each step of the way. In trust, there's almost this spectrum. When you first come to know Jesus, you know, you say you trust him, but maybe you don't know how much what that actually means. And over time, God reveals it. And as we encounter Jesus, we learn to trust him more and more. And that's what we see with this family. They're following this spectrum. Till ultimately there is a moment when they say, "This bottle is just stuff. We were trusting on it to get us through. We were trusting on things. We were idolizing it as our comfort and our protector. But it's just stuff. And what is the most valuable thing in that moment? It's Jesus. And they know that this bottle can be broken open and used because they don't need to count on the things anymore. They know that he can be trusted. He can be trusted with their very souls, with their lives. Not just their livelihood in life, but their very souls in death. They know, as they prepare him for burial, that his death protects them and keeps them from the darkest pits of hell. They know that he can be trusted with their very souls. And the bottle's just stuff. And so as Jesus pours himself out, they pour out this bottle. And they anoint his feet and his body for burial. They know what they didn't know before they first encountered Jesus, that he can be trusted. They've encountered him and experienced his glory and his power and his holiness. So that they've learned to trust him with everything. And everything else is just stuff. That's what happens when we encounter Jesus. We change. We're transformed. We learn to trust him more every single time. So now as the sun is setting on Lent, I want to leave you with that question today. Where on that spectrum are you? Where are you in that path, path towards trusting him? Maybe you're just getting started. That's great. Maybe you're way down the road. That's great too. But every time we encounter him, we should be trusting him more. We should be learning that everything else is just stuff. The things of earth will grow strangely dim, as we say. And, you know, as Lent's coming to a close, I want you to remember that. That he is our Lord and of greatest value. He is our priceless treasure, our pearl of great price. And that he can be trusted. As we go through Holy Week next week, at every step of the way, he can be trusted. We can count on him. Next week we start preparing him for burial. We know it won't take. We know it's a short-term death. But we're going to watch him die. We're going to go through that. And I want you to know that as you encounter him at every one of the services, at every moment during Holy Week and beyond, it's okay. He can be trusted. And so do you trust him?